being a movie director and existing in this technological world and sort of feeling like I'm harnessing a vision of the future, there was definitely a narrative tale. And that tale ended up emerging throughout all this research. And there's a log line that's pretty cool. As you know, every movie has a log line. And the log line for our film of the future is, when driving's outlawed, only outlaws will drive.
Welcome back to the Future Car Podcast. It's Ed, Vice President of Strategic Automotive Initiatives at Siemens PLM. But before I had this career in the automotive industry, I was just a kid like everybody else, pretty normal, nothing out of the ordinary. And like any little boy growing up in the Midwest, I played with cars. My favorite toy car looked just like the one Mario Andretti drove to his first Indy 500 win. It was red, had big open wheels, and a number 2 on the front. I would drive it around my little miniature track over and over again, timing it each time with a stopwatch, always trying to break the previous record, just like Mario was doing on the big Indy Speedway. The future is moving towards a world where traveling will become an efficient, autonomous driving experience. And it's going to be exciting. There'll be something to look forward to. No longer will we have to sit in traffic, crunch for time, with our hands on the steering wheel. There will be a lot of head-banging driving scenarios we won't have to deal with anymore. However, one of those things is driving itself. What about the drivers, the car fiends, the gearheads, the folks that love nothing more than going under the hood, pressing the gas, rolling the windows down, and feeling that wind rush through their hair? In the future, what happens to those of us that like to drive?
The goal of Hackrod is really to empower the everyman to have the vehicle of his dreams or needs. We really got away from accessibility in mobility throughout the tail end of the 20th century. And we really got away from that ability to dream about building and doing what you want, interestingly enough. The technology transitioned out of the hands of the everyman and into large corporations overall. And I have to say, a lot of these corporations weren't run by creative guys who were car guys or product guys. They were run by financial guys. And, you know, we definitely went from the muscle car era into the melee era of the 70s and haven't totally recovered from that since.
Miles McCoy is CEO of Hackrod, an Industry 4.0 company whose mission is to reinvent the way vehicles are designed, engineered, and produced. Hackrod's partnering with Siemens to bring AI technology and software into the manufacturing process of these dream vehicles. Think of a racing game, any racing game. It can be anything from Need for Speed to Mario Kart. Remember when you were loading the screen before the race? You'd look at a big line of cars, the selections of all the add-ons, assortment of colors, or the different designs, the engines, or the features you wanted in the car. It was exciting. And that's what Hackrod's all about, making your real-life dream vehicle as easy as designing a car in a video game. If you couldn't tell by his enthusiasm, Miles is quite the car guy. And before he made the career move of heading a company dedicated to giving people the car of their dreams, you'd find him behind the wheel.
I guess the story starts with how I got my name. And I actually got a motorcycle for my first birthday. And I was a little bitty kid who was pretty quick and took to motorcycling right away. I started racing at 4 years old. And once again, hence, Mouse was a pretty good racing name for a little kid who was pretty quick. So I kept racing most of my life. I turned professional at 14 after winning numerous amateur national championships. And took off on a professional motorcycle racing career, which then led me into the second phase of my career, which was as a professional stuntman, stunt rider, and stunt car driver. From there, I continued to have good success in that industry, And my racing took up a little bit of a different turn. I switched from motocross racing to off-road. And off-road in the western part of the world is really looked at as desert racing. And primarily, I set my sights on the Baja Peninsula.
And you were, I believe, one of the first ones to ever take a motorcycle 1,000 miles through the Baja 1000, right?
Yeah, for people that don't know about that race, the Baja 1000 is regarded as the toughest and most dangerous race in the world. It's 1,000 miles nonstop down the Baja Peninsula, which is still pretty much the Wild West out there. And so, you know, 1,000 miles through some of the roughest, harshest terrain in the world looked like a pretty good challenge. So as I said, I set my sights on Baja, and it became a big part of my life. And I didn't just decide to do it the conventional way. Traditionally, in the motorcycle classes, guys race on teams, usually four guys to a team, and each rider usually taking about 250 miles of the leg, which that in itself is pretty brutal. But I kind of looked up the top of the mountain down there and said, you know, how could I challenge myself the hardest? And I set course to solo in the Baja 1000. And so that meant nonstop at race speeds for 1,000 miles on a motorcycle.
But Mazda's expertise and experience with cars doesn't stop there. We see cars in different aspects of our culture. Race car driving is just one of them. You find cars in commercials and action movies. Think of all the car montages, races, chase scenes, and ready, set, go scenarios you've seen on the screen. Mouse has experience in movies as well, and he produced the 2012 film, Act of Valor.
I grew up in the film business. Both my parents were in it, and I was sort of that next generation of stuntmen. And so I had a leg in. You know, the film business is tough to get in, but I had some pretty good skill sets as a motorcycle rider and a driver. So that transitioned well, and, you know, I moved on to being a top stuntman. And the thing about that is, as a stuntman, you get an amazing education. You know, I was fortunate to work for, you know, a number of the top Hollywood action directors at the time. And, you know, you're blocking out scenes, working with the camera department, with the director, with the other talent. So you really get an idea of it. And I said, well, I think I can do it myself or do it better. And as I was getting a little bit older, the natural transition was to jump up to producer and director. So I actually produced the film Act of Valor as well as starred in it. And from there, I just felt like I could do this and transition. Well, you know what? I got to back up. There's a little moment in between that was definite pivot point and helped my decision to move from stunts to directing. I was shooting a job up in Canada, and I was on an ATV, and it was the only time that I've ever really been hurt bad on a job, but I flipped an ATV off the side of a mountain, full throttle, top gear into the rocks, and just absolutely destroyed myself and sheared my tibia and fibia in half, blew the bones out. Literally, my foot was up by my knee with the bones blown out, and ended up in the hospital in bed for about 6 months. And at that point, I said, well, you know, you probably ought to think about that other career you were talking about directing. Now's a good time. And got out of bed and then set my sights on a different direction, which was becoming a top Hollywood action director.
You see it and you don't realize the amount of engineering that goes on behind it. Like you were saying, smaller cameras that you can carry and things like that. And people don't really appreciate the amount of effort that goes into just making that possible from a technical standpoint. And two of the greatest car stunts, world record setting car stunts that you've been involved in, the Hot Wheels double loop, where two cars went through a 60-foot vertical loop, you know, simulating what's done with little Hot Wheel cars. And then I was actually at the 100th running or the 100th anniversary of the Indy 500 in May of 2011 and saw the world record distance car jump that was, I think, 332 feet. So can you tell us a little bit about the engineering and the understanding of the physics and all that? How'd you go about making these two world record car stunts, you know, successful on the first try?
Yeah, we actually had three world records. So we ended up setting three world records in 18 months. The little known third world record was the world's longest corkscrew jump.
What's a corkscrew jump?
It's a barrel roll.
Oh, wow.
We barrel rolled a car almost 100 and some feet, which was a real tricky piece of engineering. But let me tell you the story how this all happened. So I had built a pretty big reputation as a top guy in action filmmaking with a heavy car background. And my now partner, Felix Holst, was running creative for Hot Wheels worldwide and product design. And his vision was to reignite the brand and bring it to life and go from a toy brand to a lifestyle brand for boys of all ages. And Hot Wheels for Real was born. And the concept was to mimic how kids play with their toys and bring it to life full scale and really go about showing kids that play and their dreams could become a reality. So we set out on a legendary creative brief, which had a 150-foot door with a life-size Hot Wheels track and a photo of Evel Knievel standing at the bottom. And that was the brief. And he said, "Hey, man, can you bring this to life for us?" And I said, "Yeah, I think so." And, you know, we wanted to go set some world records along the way. I got a note. The Evel Knievel inspiration was good because that's the tone and the feel we wanted to set, but Evel Knievel actually only holds one world record, and that's for most broken bones. And we weren't looking to break any bones. So we set out to go set some world records, and the first one up was to go set the world record for the longest car jump. But we just didn't do this with a long run up and make it easy. We actually had to go build 150-foot door in the middle of the Indy 500, put a life-size Hot Wheels track, and figure out how to jump a truck the length of a football field. And, you know, it's funny, at the time, we were pretty much using what I like to call Chuck Yeager style, which is big balls, good math, and a lot of pros in the stack. But we didn't have a lot of reliable advanced technologies. So, you know, we ended up doing traditional workups, building the truck that we felt could take the loads, and doing it by a lot of feel, a lot of the seat of the pants and slide rule math. And we ended up pulling off the impossible. And I think we went from concept to world record inside of 4 months as an engineering cycle to think about that.
Now, if you think about doing stuff like that in 4 months, if you had all these simulation tools with the world's greatest computers and all that, that's one thing. But doing all that without that capability, you had to have some very special techniques, I would imagine. Like, as you say, you had to hack the solution with whatever tools you had available, right?
Well, you know what? I like to call it, there was a lot of wizardry. So when I say wizardry, there's this innate skill set that came out of the 20th century, and, you know, 20th century hot rodding and racing. You know, for instance, up until a few years ago, the fastest off-road cars in the world were strung out with chalk on a shop floor and built by just innate knowledge that was passed along. We call it the Wizards of Cromolie. So we brought together a team of guys that somehow just understood and had the feel and the know-how to do it. And I said, you know, wait a minute. This is about to become a lost art. And we're going to have to quantify this and capture it and harness this wizardry to move forward and pass it along.
Mouse wasn't the only guy passionate about this kind of car making. That's why Hack Rod exists today, to preserve this art of car making and combining it with the advanced technology of the 21st century. Sounds amazing, doesn't it? Like something out of your wildest futuristic dream. So naturally, I wondered, how would this really work? How would one go about building a dream car with Hack Rod? Do I submit a Google form with my desired color, my specs, and in 3 or 4 weeks see this shiny new car with a bow outside my window? Not quite.
Automation, electrification, and ride sharing are going to totally change the mobility landscape. And now, emergent Industry 4.0 technologies are saying, wait a minute, we can look at manufacturing completely differently. So we asked ourselves the question, you know, what would Henry do right now? And, you know, Henry Ford built the modern manufacturing process in the River Rouge plant, you know, completely revolutionized or pioneered, as we should say, modern mass manufacturing. But his famous quote was, you can have any car you want as long as it's black. And we're saying, you can have any car you want as long as it's different and your own.
So before we get into talking about how to make your custom dream car, what is your dream car?
Right now, my dream car is our Case Study 1 La Bandita, which is a super sexy, stripped down speedster that was inspired and the nickname from the legendary cars that raced in La Carrera Panamericana and the Mille Miglia. So in the mid to late 50s through the 60s, there was a famous race in Mexico called La Carrera Panamericana. It went basically from Guatemala to Texas, and it was a multi-stage road race. The roads weren't great, totally wild, unbridled, but the cars there are those cars that we all dream about right now. You know, your 300 SLs, your 550 Spiders, your old 250 GT Ferraris, all of those cars were La Carrera cars, and they're now $10 million at Pebble Beach.
You know, it also, when I look at La Bandita and photos of it, it reminds me of the Porsche 550 Spider that James Dean had. Was that part of the inspiration in any way?
Yeah, absolutely. We sort of took all of that inspiration from those, you know, fantastic cars. As I said right now, it all cost $10 million at concourse of Pebble Beach up there, and we're like, all right, let's pull some cues from this or that, but let's make a stripped down, purpose built car that we want that only suits our needs and doesn't have any compromises from a design perspective. So, you know, La Bandita was set out to represent design without compromise.
All right, so I've got an idea in my head of my perfect dream car. Tell me how Hack Rod is going to help me make that dream a reality.
Are you going to tell me the car?
I could go for La Bandita. I sort of like it. Yeah. Let's make two of those. How do we go about doing that? I might have a few changes in it, you know, here and there, but let's say it's something like that.
Well, I think, you know, if you want to start from a clean sheet, we're looking at a future where you're going to be able to start with sketch and with reference. And from there, you're going to be guided along the way using AI agents and support tools and guidelines to start to be able to shape the car of your dreams. And as we move from there, you're going to be able to start harnessing an emerging technological phenomenon, I think, which is generative design, or more importantly, generative engineering.
How does an AI agent help you take a sketch to the next level?
So you'll be able to start with sketch or with some reference imagery. And from there, you're going to start to look at multiple examples of what the possibilities could be that will be provided to you and be guided along a design process that will really enable the everyman to start to be able to design a product of their dreams with support and guide track. And then from there, you know, once you've established your exterior designs, you're going to be able to have your engineering solutions automated for you. You know, a lot like if you're writing a sentence now and Word will autocomplete your grammar and spelling.
So it'll guide me through like general categories, like I want a road racer or a dune buggy or a motorcycle or whatever. And it guides me through the selection process, I guess, and narrows me down to ultimately the vehicle that I want. And then I can put in all the features and details as well.
Absolutely. So, you know, when you've sort of settled on your design, and also we envision a future where, you know, designers are going to have an unbelievable opportunity to be entrepreneurs. You know, right now, and we'll get to the barriers of entry for great design, but you're going to have, you know, massive amounts of designs that are coming from kids all over the world that are going to be accessible or hackable just digitally. Because we will talk about the digital twin and virtual twin phenomenon in a minute. But so imagine that, you know, you've moved into a world that really will become the gamification of engineering. I think this is something that we really need to address because this is going to change the industrial landscape as we know it. So, you know, enter into a virtual world where you're in a full immersive photoreal 3D experience that's threaded across the cloud. A lot like an industrial version of Ready Player One, you know, where they enter a parallel world that's completely photoreal. We're looking at that at first, you know, for recreational gaming, but it will be in industrial applications that mimic that are supported by AI engineering solutions.
So when you buy a car now, right, you're forced to take, like you said, what the mass producers create for you. This is where Hackrod and Siemens combine forces.
There's a synergy that just doesn't exist anywhere else in the industrial world right now. So the large scale printers are running Sinumeric controllers for all of the motion control, which was, a really big deal. We needed the best motion controls on there. And then the Siemens software overall connecting with the Siemens hardware just made it work right. So, you know, being able to optimize the CAM out, the computer-aided manufacturing out, and tie the software, you know, inside of NX to the hardware was fundamental. And that's really led us to hit this significant milestone.
You know, when you buy a mass-produced car, it goes through all sorts of safety certification, and that's based on actually crashing the cars. If you're going to make one-of-a-kind dream car, you can't afford to crash it. And I know Siemens has software like TOSS's pre-scan and other simulation models that allow you to virtually certify the safety of a car. How important is that in the overall scheme of how to make this dream car possible?
That's extremely important. But I'm going to take one more step to talk about how this all works. So as I said, we were working with artificial intelligence engineering, which we're calling generative design and generative engineering. And now what we're doing is we're optimizing our structures to their best possible performance criteria within the boundary of the manufacturability of the machines. So we're starting to create a car that understands the best practices of how to make itself, which is pretty wild.
How it's going to make itself.
It's going to understand its own best practices. So the generative engineering is going to say, here's the most optimized performance for your criteria within the boundaries of the manufacturability. So now, you know, we're looking at smart systems and smart product. So that was really exciting. And now that we can use that technology along with the large-scale industrial printers, we can now print certified, validated, large-scale industrial structure as quantities of one. And this is going to lead into the simulation, the digital twin in a second. So what this said was, oh, okay, we've just solved the last mile problem. Because the business model for somebody wanting to create their dream car in the quantity of one starts to, or the quantity of 100, fall apart because we have what we're calling the valley of death. And in our project, we had to go about jumping the valley of death. And what that means is, let's say three kids in a garage said, who used to play with Hot Wheels, we're going to create our dream car. Here it is. It's La Bandita. It's totally sexy. It's stripped down. Doesn't have a lot of amenities, but it's the car we wanted. And I'm going to get to that in a minute on design compromise. And all of a sudden, they roll this prototype, which the old methodology of prototyping required tens of millions of dollars. You had to go to clay modeling. You had to have a massive wind tunnel. Used to have all sorts of technologies that weren't available to three kids in a garage. Now, we can do all of our design virtually in photoreal 3D space in virtual reality. So we're looking at an absolute perfect representation of the design. We then can run computational fluid dynamics in the cloud and do all of our aerodynamics. Then we can move on to advanced simulation to, once again, check the structural applications in their desired environments. Moving on from there, we can actually digitally crash the car and achieve certification. So our prototype now becomes a complete ready-to-go digital twin. It's pretty amazing the scope and scale of Siemens and how spot on their vision is overall of the future. And to think about integrating everything that you just said along with your product creation, that starts to become a really compelling, interesting future that's fun and safe and productive.
So, Mouse, I want to close out. I want to go back to talking about movies and TV and all that. Let's go full circle here. Movies have always given us a view of the future, right? Star Wars, say, or whatever. A look into things that may become, sometimes good, sometimes bad. So what's your idea? What's the next movie? What's the next idea that takes everything we've been talking about and sort of thrusts us into the future?
Yeah. Well, being a movie director and existing in this technological world and sort of feeling like I'm harnessing a vision of the future, there was definitely a narrative tale. And that tale ended up emerging throughout all this research, and there's a log line that's pretty cool. As you know, every movie has a log line, and the log line for our film of the future is, when driving's outlawed, only outlaws will drive. So we're looking at a future state, Detroit 2028, as the proving grounds. And this film that we're setting out to build will probably be the biggest and most innovative car film of all time. And it looks at this event horizon that's out there that we got to address, that's undeniable. And, you know, there's going to be a moment with full autonomous systems and humans, they're not going to work well together. You know, the conventional wisdom is level 5 autonomy will be within closed-looped, geo-fenced urban environments. So in our film of the future in Detroit, at the same time that three kids in a garage are starting the coolest car companies in the world, automation is, it's emerging. It's going to be there. And, you know, we're starting to see job transition, job loss. And, you know, in our film, there's some new social structures that are being born. And, you know, a lot of people might be losing their jobs and end up on universal basic income subsidy and losing their identities. And in our film, we said, well, the one thing that a lot of men and women are going to be able to hold on to is, hey, I'm still a rider. I'm still a gearhead. I'm from Detroit. I've automotive heritage. And, I can still ride my Harley, drive my muscle car or the car that I built in my garage with new tech. When the first socialized mobility experiment of the United States is laid down in Detroit of all places and driving's outlawed, in the name of open, socialized, autonomous rideshare.
Hey, Mouse, I got to tell you, you have got my gearhead, rider, driving blood pumping. And what I really want to do is go down to my garage, jump in my car, and start driving it as fast as I can. But if I do that, I know I'm going to get a few more tickets. So I can't wait till this world that we've been talking about becomes a reality. I'll take the autonomous car to work. But while I'm at work, I'm going to be looking forward to when I come home and I can jump in that transporter to drive the car of my dreams. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ed. Really love how you're seeing the world, and it's my pleasure to speak to you.
It's not every day you get to talk to a Hollywood film director and producer about future cars, but it's just an indicator of just how the future of transportation is a concept that's got most people excited. On the next episode of the Future Car Podcast, Jeff talks to Anil Kanar about car audio. It's not just about connecting your phone and streaming music. There's a whole lot more to audio when it comes to the autonomous driving car. Thanks for joining us today. And for more, visit Siemens PLM Software online. Siemens PLM Software is a world-leading provider of product lifecycle management and manufacturing operations management software. We help thousands of companies realize innovation by optimizing their processes from planning and development through manufacturing, production, and support.